The new Flan City Council is leading the fight to free their captive city. Heroes are retaking the city block by block from the evil hordes. But don't worry, we at the Retro Zoo Super Show are staying well away from all of that.
Live from Kakariko Village. Throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting the Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet. The Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Now here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Welcome to the Retro Zoo Super Show, and I am your host, Kai. As always, we are thrilled to be here today. We're kind of in the middle of this tabletop role-playing game series, and having just an absolute blast with it. And this is we're ending the kind of the section of this series where we talk about some of the really great games that were directly inspired by specifically Dungeons and Dragons and the whole tabletop RPG scene. And this is like an area that I have not had a ton of experience in, and so it's really been a blast kind of digging into some of these games and playing some of them and watching a lot of them, games I did not know existed, and being able to watch those and kind of catch a glimpse into straight stuff I was not allowed to play in the late 80s, early 90s, but I'm an adult now and I can play what I want to, and so I am therefore doing that, and just having an absolute blast with it. One of those games is and for those who listened last episode, you know that I am now part of an actual play podcast called Dice and Dreary. And please, if you haven't checked out that episode or you have not subscribed yet, please do check that out. We're really actually exceedingly proud of the work that's going on over there. And I've just been absolutely thrilled to be a part of it because it's been an absolute blast. Like 2 days ago, I'm just flipping through some of these videos of the video games that were created based on AD&D at the time, and just ran across this game based on the original Ravenloft game, the original Strahd game that then inspired the fifth edition game that we're playing, Curse of Strahd. And it's like, we've been playing this game for months. I mean, we've been playing Curse of Strahd for months now, and I did not know that there is a Strahd video game. And it looks absolutely terrible, but you have better believe that I am going to play it. And hopefully not hate every second of it, but we'll see. I'm trying to figure out a time and a place to do that. That particular game is not going to be part of our series here, but it is going to be something that I would really like to play in the near future to at least get a feel for. But so we're gonna dive into actually the original, the OG AD&D video game. But before we do that, we're going to tackle a couple of things. The first of all, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw this, and I have not been streaming much, and that is not an indication that I am giving up my stream. It is not an indication that we're going to be, just be hit or miss in the future. I hope to get full blown back into that, but So in essence, I tackled too much at once, and that was not good for my health. And so I had to kind of take a step back from certain things. And that was one of them. We have absolutely not taken a break from music, because last week we launched our second single of our second release of February, and that is actually the theme song for the Dice and Dreary podcast. Those of you who do follow us, you know that on our Patreon page we are this year going through the soundtrack of Mega Man 3, and kind of doing the Techno Funk Boy spin on these classic tracks and expanding them, recording them, remixing them. And we have earlier in February we released the first of these songs, the Snake Man stage, and that is available on Patreon. We last week released a song from the Dice and Dreary soundtrack. That soundtrack is actually going to be out in not the too far distant future, probably a few months from now. I'm trying to calculate the exact day that's going to come out, but we'll have more on that in the near future. But it'll probably be early summer, I'm thinking so far. But so we released the first track to that. That was a work that we did for Dice and Dreary. So the rest of the tracks are going to be available on their Patreon page, and as they're featured in the show. So a lot of new music's coming out. We'll have that in album form that you can snag in just a few months here as well. So that is all going on, but we've been having a lot of fun lately with the Dice and Dreary podcast. So I have not actually been playing a lot of video games. Our second goal of the year, video game wise, was the first, in January and February, a group of us from a Facebook group were going to be playing through Chrono Trigger, and I have played that before, and I was actually doing a new game plus and getting all of the endings. Well, I got two of them. I did two, and that was one of the victims of just me not being in the best of health lately, and so we have kind of crossed that off the list. I already earlier in the year beat SimCity on SNES, and that was not part of the goals. And so, it did not take me long to just completely abandon the goal list, but there is plenty still on that list that I do want to try to tackle this year. And I am starting to feel better, and so I'm hoping to be able to do that in the near future. But before we roll in to our Dungeons and Dragons section here, I did want to discuss a little bit of news. This is big. Nintendo of America's President Reggie from the last quite some time and quite a popular figure at Nintendo of America is stepping down, and we're getting a new president of Nintendo of America, Doug Bowser. And so on April the 15th,
did you say Bowser?
Drum, yes, I said Bowser. His name is Doug Bowser.
the president of Nintendo of America.
Yeah, his name Bowser. Yes. Everyone on Twitter has already made this joke.
The president is named Bowser.
Yes, his name... Drum. We don't need to make the joke. Everyone, literally everyone has already made the joke. We don't need to go into that.
How did he get the job?
I'm sure with his many accomplishments in life, I'm sure it was because of all of his accomplishments. It wasn't because he kidnapped a princess.
Because he looked like Dennis Hopper.
That's not even... Okay, you know what? Nobody watched the Mario Brothers movie. And the people who did watch the movie, none of them listened to this. But, you know, that movie came out way before most of our audience was born. Or at least they blocked it out. And so, you know, you're taking something that everyone in the world has already made a joke about and then tying it into an obscure reference that nobody knows.
I assumed they had seen the movie since this is a retro gaming podcast.
No, you don't understand. The hosts have to watch these terrible movies that the hosts do. And that's kind of a preview for 2 weeks from now. But no, the hosts have to watch the terrible movies. And then we come on and we complain about how terrible they are. The listeners don't have to watch it. That's why they're listening. They're like, hey, that movie sounds terrible. And we haven't even talked about that movie. We haven't even brought it up. Like, no one knows what you're talking about.
It is a 1993 movie called Super Mario Brothers. Dennis Hopper played President Koopa, which was a reference to King Koopa, the original name for Bowser.
Okay, well, I'm sure now that if you rewind 5 minutes, then his joke is going to be tremendously funny. Can we get on with the program now? Sorry about that, folks. All right, well, so let's get into this. So, Dungeons & Dragons, from the very early years of video games, had just a really profound influence on gaming. And so you see a lot of these games come out with at least some elements or another being pulled from Dungeons and Dragons. So, like, in the American role-playing game tradition, you know, you have that kind of initial character creation. You have like the elements of experience and leveling up, and you know how you're casting spells and stuff. The Japanese RPGs take a lot of those same elements. You don't have that same kind of character creation, but they are pulling a lot from just the way these games are set up, the dungeon crawling elements of it, the random encounters leading to the boss, you know, gathering of equipment, magic equipment. These are all stuff that are just baked in to role playing games on video games. To the point like that, even like the original Final Fantasy game had mind flayers in it, which are, you know, is specifically a Dungeons and Dragons monster, and so in a lot of ways the influence was very heavy and very, very obvious. But it actually wasn't until 1988 that Dungeons and Dragons itself reached the computer gaming industry, and it hit video games hard. This publishing company, Strategic Simulations Inc., or SSI, got the licensing agreement to make Advanced Dungeons and Dragons a game, and they ran with it. They started churning out these games, multiple games a year. Until they had amassed about 30 games based on Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. The very first of these was Pool of Radiance. Now, I have to tell you a story about Pool of Radiance, about what I thought was my first encounter with Pool of Radiance, is when I was in Boy Scouts. And, you know, if you can imagine the elf child, Kai, you know, in his uniform, getting merit badges, that is absolutely what happened. But there's a magazine that a lot of you will know, especially if you were scouts. There's this magazine called Boy's Life, and it's a magazine designed for Boy Scouts. And it was actually a really fantastic magazine, and it had a big, nice big section of comics that were really good. There were jokes in the back. It also had like this section in the back that you could like, you know, to buy stuff. And I, you know, I haven't looked at Boy's Life in ages. I'm going to take a second to see if it's still around. I would not be at all surprised if it is. Let's see. Yeah, no, it's still in circulation. It is. It seems to be going forward. So I can't imagine like that the current Boy's Life does this, but it has like this section in the back where, you know, you can mail order stuff. Well, obviously it wouldn't be mail order today. you know, you send away for your money, and in 6 to 8 weeks you get something. And so, like, you know, you could buy these like X-ray glasses, which is just like these cardboard cut out glasses with just this, you know, just, I don't know, you know, some sort of kaleidoscopic lens on them that, I mean, just, you know, just a, it's essentially wax paper that they put in these cardboard things is essentially what it is. And then you put them on, and apparently you're seeing through X-rays, because that's how that works. I remember like there was one that you could like, it was basically instructions to turn your vacuum into a hovercraft. And even as a child, that did not seem like that was an actual thing to me. And if it did work, then it was certainly not going to hold me or anybody. But this was the kind of thing that and it had articles on there related to scouting. But in the comics section, I distinctly remember this one comic in there that was like the comic version of Pool of Radiance. And so later in life, when I got into Dungeons and Dragons, I was like, man, I should try to track that down, because that was really cool. And like, I asked some people who are also scouts about it, and they kind of glared at me like, no, that wasn't the thing. And so then I went to Google, because Google knows everything. And I'm like, great, I'll just prove it to them. And I'm sure like there's probably a way just to download this stuff. So, you know, I'll be able to read it, and that'd be great. And so I, you know, I did search for Pool of Radiance comic. Couldn't find anything. I'm trying to narrow it down a little bit in Boy's Life. No, nothing. And I started to doubt myself. I started to wonder if I had just imagined the whole thing. And there were certain scenes in it that, like, I distinctly remember. So this was a thing. But it's like Google's not turning up any results. And if Google can't find it, you know, even a mention of it, it obviously never existed. So this remained a mystery to me until I started preparing for this episode, in which I think it was on archive.org, where, you know, somebody had like, had saved, PDFs of the old Boy's Life issues. So I picked one at random from the time period that I would have been, you know, a scout, and I kind of flipped to the comics, and I went there, and I immediately recognized the images. They were, I mean, just crystal clear to me. And I was like, yes, this is it. This is perfect. This is exactly what I was looking for. This is Pool of Fire. Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't Pool of Radiance at all. It was science fiction adventure called Pool of Fire. So with that, let's actually get into Pool of Radiance. So Pool of Radiance. It was the first of these Advanced Dungeons & Dragons games. It came out in 1988 on DOS, C64, etc. The next year, it hit Apple, and then a few years later, there was a port to NES that was actually quite a bit different. So I watched the DOS version of it, and then I played some of the NES version, and there are some very distinct differences, but they're both really, really interesting and really cool. One of the things that's notable for it, and this is something we've talked about in a previous episode, is that Dungeons & Dragons just lends itself to video games because all of the rules are just this math. It's algorithms. That's literally what computers are built for. The one thing it doesn't do well is to let you role play. And, you know, we've gotten a lot better at that as time has gone on, but that is the element that was really difficult to put into place. And you can put in certain choices in each one with a certain result, but you couldn't kind of put that really distinctly human element into it. And that was the weakness of the genre. But the game itself, the rules fit remarkably well. And Pool of Radiance is a game that just transplanted the rules of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons into this game. And, you know, you can, you know, very, very distinctly, I mean, it has all of those elements to it. It actually comes with two very large books, which is really, really good. One is the manual, which is just basically how to play Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And then there's an adventurer's journal, which tells you more about the situation. It's really, really good that they had the manual because, AD&D is not intuitive. You know, for those who have played, it's like, I didn't do a lot of AD&D. I only played it maybe twice besides like playing computer games based on AD&D rules. And so coming back to it, it's like, I know what THATCO means. I know what it stands for to hit armor class zero. I know what those words mean, but like actually putting that into place when I'm looking at this game is not something that's natural to me. And I'm somebody who's played the game before. Those people who haven't played the game before, it's like there's a steep learning curve there. One of the things is, okay, I mean, just very simply, it's like in most games, you want your stats to be high, and then you want your THATCO and your armor class to be low. But there's nothing actually in the game that tells you that. You have to know it. And so you need that manual in order to know it, or you need to be conversant with the rules of Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. And the rules, especially like this early, because this is actually first edition AD&D. The second edition of AD&D, which was, you know, actually what I played, came out like very soon thereafter, but these initial games were based on first edition rules. And there was a certain element with some of these numbers some of the calculations were just complicated enough to really be daunting for new players. And THATCO was one of those that you know, to calculate if you hit something or not, it's like, you know, you have to take this and then subtract the armor class, then add the roll and then subtract this and that, and then see what it comes out to. And all of that is very daunting to new people. And so, you know, coming into this game, especially without the manual, but they dump you into AD&D rules. and just expect you to like, hey, look, you got the manual there, you figure it out. You know, a lot of these games back then, it's like they didn't use a lot of memory for the text or anything. It's like we put all that in the manual for a reason. Read the manual. And so it's kind of cool that they had this like mini player's guide in here. You are able to pick different classes and different races. They don't have a complete set of those. It is more limited, but it's actually pretty broad. You know, you can be one of six races. And four classes: fighter, cleric, wizard, or thief. But you can also multi-class, which is something I wouldn't expect a game like this to actually put those rules in and to make that happen. But they did, and it's really cool. So the gameplay itself, it actually goes back and forth between you have like a first person 3D view when you're going through the towns, and this is really common in the American RPG tradition, going way back to, the original games, it's that, you're looking from that first person view as opposed to the JRPG tradition where you have a top down view. Well, one of the neat things about this is, that first person view makes the mazes a lot more difficult. You know, because you have to remember which way you're turning, which way you're looking, and it has north, south, east, west printed on the screen. But at the same time, it's a lot easier to get lost when your screen is not top down set. When it's moving with you, you can get turned around very easily, and so it's very helpful to map in those situations. But when you get into a battle itself, you do go to a top down isometric view, where you can add a little strategy. You can use walls to your advantage. You can use distance to your advantage. You can, charge in and that sort of thing. And that's another thing I really wasn't expecting, but actually adds a really cool strategic element to, and sometimes very frustrating element to, the battles themselves. So we're going to take our break right now. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about the plot a little bit, and also the NES version. And finally, we're going to be talking about the novel. So stick with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, this is Phil from philsgamingemporium.com. That's your source for all your retro gaming needs and your tabletop needs. I have been so inspired by this new series. I am so pumped that I have gathered some of the greatest, the just top tier free resources from online and printed them all together and stapled them together. And now this pack of personally cultivated materials, personally cultivated resources, can be yours for the low, low price of $59.99. Head over on over to philsgamingemporium.com, philsgamingemporium.com, and we will see you there.
And we are back. So this game is set in the Forgotten Realms universe. Now, those of you who are not all that familiar with Dungeons and Dragons, especially in this era, that they had a few different campaign settings, and Forgotten Realms really became kind of the dominant one, and for good reason. The land, it has a very wide variety of towns and situations and circumstances, and so it made for a sandbox that could host all sorts of different types of adventures. And so it was a very cool setting, and it hosted some of the most famous Dungeons and Dragons characters that have just become well known, like Dritz Duarden, Ari Salvatore's Drow Ranger creation, or Elminster the Mage. Some of the great games are set in this universe. Like Eye of the Beholder and Baldur's Gate. We're going to talk more about Baldur's Gate in a couple of weeks. But this game is set in this town called Flan that has and the surrounding areas, and this town has been victim of several calamities that basically left the city deserted, and a group of people came back to try to like resettle the town. But they found that most of it had been overrun by monsters. And so they're hiring adventurers to come in and kind of clear the place out. And that's essentially the plot of the game, is that you're clearing out the area. You start off in the slums. You start off in New Flan, the civilized area. And that's where, you know, you can go to the town hall where you can get your commissions and they direct you. You know, you can go to the trainer, which is where you level up. That is a point of particular frustration in my game on the NES because it's very expensive. there are different clerics, shops. Ends the typical thing that we expect from a town in a role-playing game. Then you head off into the slums, and there are some set battles that you need to fight, and then there are a certain number of random encounters that you need to fight in order to clear it out. And then once you do, they're like, "All right, great, we have an extra section of the city. Now why don't you go face this thing?" And so each of the areas have a different theme and a different problem. And so, you know, there's one area overrun with undead, and over in this place you're going to face a vampire, and then over in another place they have a different sort of problem, until you just systematically clean the place out, in which case you finally come to the end, to the castle, where you will eventually come face to face with the Lord of the Ruins, who is this bronze dragon called Tyranthraxus. Now, one kind of cool element of this is, if you know Dungeons & Dragons lore, you're like, a bronze dragon? Oh, great. No, he's good. Because all of the dragons with metallic color are good dragons, and all the dragons with chromatic coloring are bad dragons. So blue dragons are bad, bronze dragons are good. It's intentionally setting you up there to kind of misinterpret this situation. Because this bronze dragon is actually possessed by an evil spirit, and the evil spirit is Tyranthraxus. And so, you know, they're definitely kind of playing with your expectations there. So the battles in this game are like epically huge, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, you need that top down view. It's like if you've played Eye of the Beholder, you stay in that first person view to do the battles, but there's not that many people in front of you, and you don't have that many people on your side. Well, you know, you have four people on your side and perhaps some NPCs to get you up to six. Well, in this game, your party starts off with six, and you can also get NPCs, or non-player characters for those who are unfamiliar with the term, get some NPCs to grow your party even larger. And you can face that many or more of the bad guys. And so you might come across a group of eight orcs, and it's just this massive melee. This adds like this really kind of cool element of excitement there. The battles run on AD&D rules. And so, you know, for those who are familiar with the system, you kind of jump in and you get going with it. It's kind of like working with the graph paper, right? You know, you move your characters along with the grid, and you get close to the bad guy and you say attack, and you hit or not based on the random dice roll. And so, it's very close to one of these one of the battles that you might experience in pen and paper, using all of those elements in a very cool way, and so. That's one of the areas of the game that's actually a lot of fun, and it can be very, very clunky. You know, this is a 1988 game, and so there are some parts that you wish went a little bit faster or ran a little bit smoother, but it is a lot of fun having these encounters. It's also ridiculously difficult. I watched some people play. Like I said, the DOS version of the game, and then I played the Nintendo version of the game, and it's brutal. It's brutal. Like the people who were doing the Let's Play of it would hit a battle that they'd lose three times in and keep having to reset. And I was doing the exact same thing. I was just like, okay, how can I get through this? Because that thing's really tough. It's got that old type of difficulty that we really did kind of expect in games in the late 80s or early 90s, you know, when the games couldn't be as long, you know, as like data wise. And so it was harder. So it really made you work to get through it, to get your money's worth. But despite that, the battles really remain interesting. You know, they can get tedious just because of the clunkiness of it. But for the most part, you know, you're really invested in this. You know, when you're setting your players in and you're waiting for that text to come up to tell you if you hit or not, it has that kind of excitement that you might have around a table with your friends. Rolling the dice and seeing what pops up. It's got that same kind of tension. That's one of the great things about Dungeons & Dragons in general, is waiting for those dice to land, because until they land, you know what's going to hit and you know what's going to miss. But until they land, it can go either way. And that could mean death to your party, or that could mean victory. And that sort of built-in tension is here. And so I was actually having a lot of fun with it. The Nintendo version actually cuts down on both your playable characters and also the enemies per battle. And so, instead of facing six orcs with your six people, you know, you are going to face three orcs with your five people. It still has that kind of scale. You know, there are still battles that you're facing five different enemies on, but just in general, they've cut down on the number of enemies. I didn't feel like that has taken away a lot from the game. There are some elements that they've kind of simplified. You know, just simple stuff like in the NES version. You know, you don't have to worry about ammo for your bow, whereas in the DOS version you have to make sure you have enough arrows. But stuff like that is few and far between. They basically did actually a really kind of cool port of the game. And so, like a lot of these games of this era, like a lot of the Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, you know, it's a dungeon crawler with not a ton of plot. You know, you are able to make some choices in it, but basically no matter what kind of character you make, you're being hired to clear out things and kill Tyranthraxus. And that's your job. And that's what you're there to do. You know, we haven't quite gotten to the sophistication of how like all the characters might interact and that sort of thing. But at the same time, for what it is, it actually brings a lot. It actually brings a lot to the game. And I found myself, as I'm playing even the NES version, I find myself getting excited about role-playing games, about Dungeons and Dragons. And this whole series has really got me just pumped about tabletop role-playing games and, you know, kind of how all of these things connect and being able to play these things with friends and family and playing this, it makes me excited about, like, you know, I was like I said, I wasn't allowed to play these games as a kid. I had a good friend who did, and every once in a while he would tell me about, you know, one of the adventures that he and his friends had. And this kind of brings me back to that sort of thing that, you know, it's like walking into the room and not knowing what's going to be there, not knowing what kind of traps are there, not knowing what you're going to find, you know. And so, it's a game that I enjoyed a lot more than I thought I would. You know, I thought my other experience, at least with console gaming, with Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, was Eye of the Beholder, and I was expecting Eye of the Beholder, and I actually liked this one better. You know, so Eye of the Beholder's later, also SSI, and so, you know, they. I played the Super Nintendo version of Eye of the Beholder, which I also understand is a really good port. But I actually like this better because of basically the battle system was just simply a lot of fun, and so yeah, This is one of those things, especially if you are nostalgic for tabletop gaming, might be worth a look. I reread. I listened to the audiobook for the novelization. Now, this is a book that I owned. It had to have been college years, which is quite a bit longer ago than I would care to admit. But I read this book, and I read the book because, you know, I remembered it from Boy's Life, and I was always so interested. No, it's seriously that's why I got the book. And I really enjoyed it, but I found I really couldn't remember much about it because it has been quite a long time. And so I found the audiobook and I listened to it because I'd done away with like all of my Forgotten Realms books at some point. And I think they're in a box somewhere, but that's really frustrating me because we are going to be chatting about Baldur's Gate, and I had the novelization for Baldur's Gate 2. And I cannot find an audiobook for it. To be fair, I haven't looked very hard yet, because that's 2 weeks away. I still have another book to read for next week. Yes, we are doing novelizations of all these games. Why not? This is a retro gaming podcast, so we're going to be talking about novelizations of Dungeons and Dragons campaigns that. Had video game versions of them, because yeah, this is retro gaming. I listened to it, and what I was really curious about is, you know, the game is like I said, really really light on plot, and so how are we going to get through that? How are we going to overcome that in order to actually have a novel? Because I read a novelization. Of kind of a hack and slash game that was novelized as a hack and slash novel. And I'm not going to mention the name of this particular book in this particular game. I will say it begins with the letter D and it ends with oom. But I read that and might as well explain why I read it. So I read a lot of Deep Space Nine novels, and the author of the Doom novelization wrote one of my favorite Deep Space Nine novels. I thought it was great. And so I was kind of just looking for stuff that he had written. I read another Star Trek novel by him, and I really liked it. And I just started looking for other stuff he had written. I found Doom, and it was terrible. And so I recommend his Trekkie stuff. So I read it, and it was just, it was 250 pages, however long it was, of just fighting and blood and gore and completely unmemorable in every way. And I was curious how this was going to play out. And it turns out that it's actually really good. It does get a little hacky and slashy at times. The action scenes are not the best I've read. If you want the best, the best, that would be Ari Salvatore. If you want Forgotten Realms action in book form, my goodness, Ari Salvatore. But this book, the added a lot to it. And I was well into the book before they even got to the city of Flaon. It follows these three people who come to Flaon separately and for different reasons. And they have all had some tragedy in their life that, because it's Dungeons and Dragons. And they arrive at Flaon, and fate brings them together, and they kind of fall into the hands of a corrupt politician who's trying to get power, who makes them kind of clear out areas of the town so that he will look good. And then that really escalates and comes to a head as well. But it added a lot of really cool characters and a lot of kind of cool plot and development. And I found myself really, really enjoying it. I really do want to find that Baldur's Gate book, because I remember not liking it at the time, but I think I didn't like it because it was so different than the way I played the game. And Baldur's Gate, when we get to it, is one of those games that is like really, you can play it a lot of different ways, and you can play it completely evil and you can play it completely good. And your choices have very real consequences. And so it was written in a way that was not how I played the game at all. And I think I was annoyed at that. And I kind of want to go back to it to see if maybe it is just really good, and I was just in a bad mood at the time. I don't know. But I would like to go back to it and just kind of check it out and see what the case may be. But we'll find out in a couple of weeks if I found the book or found the audio version. But in the meantime, the novel was a lot of fun, and it actually touched on a lot of the situations that you find yourself in the game, a lot of different areas, and it uses the different themes of the areas, which I think is really one of the strong points of the game, is that you're not going through 50 areas of the game fighting goblins. Each one has a theme and something that you're accomplishing, but it uses those different themes to tie into the plot rather well. And so I was quite impressed. The game itself has had a few different sequels, and it's part one of a four-part series. Each chapter came out a year apart, and so this one was 88, and the next game came out in 89, and you could port your characters between the games, which was a very cool feature that a lot of these games at the time were really starting to play with. And these are games, if I can actually ever get out of the slums of Flaon, that I might try to tackle, but I've got to get through the brutal difficulty of this game first. It feels bad when you're like dying multiple times to in a single battle in level one. So that is Pool of Radiance. Like I said, it was a game that I really enjoyed quite a bit more than I expected to. I was expecting just slog through something, and I ended up staying up way too late two nights ago trying to get through one particular battle so I can get this magic item and level up everybody. Had to raise 1,000 gold for each one to level them. And that is not an easy thing when you're at level one. But I just found myself just really engrossed by the gameplay, but kind of more importantly, this game spawned, what followed from SSI, just a plethora of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons game, a lot of them based on the stuff they were doing in this game itself. It was the starting game in just a really great a series of Advanced Dungeons & Dragons game that came out very very rapidly. A lot of these games fell into what kind of became known as the Gold Box series because of, they all had kind of a similar cover border that was gold. And, to this day, even though those games only came out over about a 5-year period of time, even today, those games are very highly regarded and deservedly so. So that is Pool of Radiance. And that will do it for us today. Please do come back next week. We are going to discuss another one of the early SSI games. This one not as successful, but we will get to that then. Really do appreciate you tuning in. Please do check, if you haven't already, please do check out the Dice and Dreary podcast. We're having a complete blast with that. And so I do hope that you enjoy it. In the meantime, do check us out on Facebook and Twitter. If you are interested in tagging along this year on Patreon for the new music that's coming out, and as I explained, for the year we were trying to get a Mega Man 3 track out once a month, going through the soundtrack. The first one is out, plus a bonus track from the Dice and Dreary podcast. We don't normally put up the music at all levels of our Patreon, but we are doing it this year. And for those Mega Man 3 tracks. And so this is one of those things that, look, if you wait for this to come out digitally, it's going to cost $129 per track to get them. But right now, you can get them as they come out for a buck a month, which is a buck a track, plus any bonuses that we throw into there. And so I do hope that you'll check that out at patreon.com/. Until next week, whatever you are playing, I hope that you really enjoy it. And keep in mind that the Techno Fun Boy is the Retro Fun Boy.
Retro Zoo Super Show is brought to you by the Techno Funk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at Techno Funk Boy, on Facebook at the Techno Funk Boy, and sign up for our email list at technofunkboy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and gameplay clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. Unless you have responsibilities that need to be done over time, then you can gain